begin the current daven, Masechtas Kedushin, daf Mem Vav. We begin three lines down by the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion of the previous daf. That is, we had mentioned a halacha in the Mishnah, which was a springboard for this discussion relating to a Mishnah Masechtas Gittin. And that is, there's a machlekes Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim regarding a Naira HaMayrasa, a girl between the ages of 12 and 12 and a half, who is already halachically an adult, but yet she's still in her father's domain, and she was already engaged, but not totally married, to be totally removed from her father's domain. Then if the chasen wants to divorce her, who can receive that get? Rabbi Yehuda holds only the father, not the girl. Whereas the chacham hold that he or Yevia, whichever one, either her or her father. Now, on that, there was the discussion regarding our Mishnah that sounds like it's saying that by Kedushin, that it's only her father, because it says that Avia Naira, he could be Mekabel, her Kedushin, and him and the Shliach, but not the daughter. So seemingly said the Gemara that seems to be like Rabbi Yechon, not like Rish Lakish, because Rish Lakish had said the same achlikas that there is between the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah Masechtas Gittin, same thing they would argue by the halacha of Kedushin regarding if the Naira could receive her own Kedushin, and yet our Mishnah says clearly that it could only be the father. And that the Gemara said for Rish Lakish that our Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda, and that's why it's not a difficulty, because he holds even by Gerishin that it's only the father, not the girl. So too by Kedushin, that's why our Mishnah said it's only Aviha Naira, and not that the Naira herself cannot receive our Kedushin. Now, on that the Gemara got into a discussion regarding a Naira, receiving her own Gerishin or her own Kedushin, like in our Mishnah, which it said not, either like Rabbi Yechanan, even according to Rabbanan, according to Rish Lakish, only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Then the Gemara got into a discussion regarding what's with if a katana receives her own kedushin without the father's consent. Now in halacha, definitely there's no validity to a minor who has no das, has no yad, and she's in her father's domain to create her own kedushin. However, Rav and Shmuel said that if a minor goes ahead and does kedushin with a man, she requires get and miun. Now the reason why she requires a get is because maybe the father is going to hear about it and he's going to be okay with it. Retroactively, that would make it a biblical marriage. And because of that doubt, we require a get, but then we do require a miun to balance that out so that people know that it's not a definite get, and therefore if that guy ever ends up getting engaged to this girl who he divorced, this minor, to her sister, that people shouldn't assume automatically that she's a chayis gerusha, which is an erva, and that there's a chi of misa over there, and therefore kedushin wouldn't be typhus. And that would be problematic because actually Kedushin might be typhus because maybe he was never engaged to that minor because maybe the father never agreed to it and therefore required both get and miyun. Now it's regarding that discussion that our Gemara continues on this halacha. Itmar, it was said, Ketanash in Iskacha Shaloy Ladasavir. Regarding this case that we had described, which is the halacha of Rav and Shmuel, regarding a minor that had gotten engaged without her father's awareness. Now, so again, as we said, so we require a get and miyun. Now, Amar Rav, Rav said, Bein hi u bein aviyo yechaylin la'akiv, whether her or her father could go ahead and stop this from becoming a Kedushin. Now, the reason being is because since when she received the Kedushin, they didn't have the father's consent at that point in time. It's only, as we said, the only way it could really be a Kedushin to require a get is if later on the father hears about it and he's okay with it. We're not sure that might happen, so therefore we have to consider it as a possible Kedushin. But what Rav is coming to say now is that, therefore, if the girl later, this minor, changes her mind before her father is agreeing to it, she could retract, and it doesn't help anymore if the father is agreeable. I mean, the whole concern was that the father is agreeable, he creates the Kedushin with his consent because the money was already given, and he's okay with it. So retroactively, it was a Kedushin. What Rav is being mechadish, what he's saying over here is that just like the father could say, no way, I don't want this, and you're right, halachically it's not going to be a Kedushin, the girl herself could preempt that, and she could say, no, I'm not okay with this Kedushin that we did because halachically it wasn't a Kedushin. It's only when the father then agrees to her receipt of receiving the Kedushin, and he's okay with it, that Ratzin will then solidify the receiving of the Kedushin that she did. Here, if she backs out before he's even agreeable, that will not allow for his okay with it to create that in the Kedushin, because she already undid her action. So the father could retract, obviously, because we need his consent in the first place. But even not him, even before he's agreeable, if she backs out, it's also not going to be a Kedushin. Now, Rav Asi, he disagrees with Rav. He says, Avi of Elohi. No, once she did the action, now she already received the money, a Maitza Kedushin was done. Now, the chalais of Kedushin, the actual effect of it, will only take effect with the father's ratzin, but she can't back out. There's nothing for her to say, I don't want. It's not your ratzin that decides it, and you already received the Kedushin. If the father later on agrees, even after the daughter says, oh, I don't want this anymore, it's too late. The father's ratzin will then go ahead and create this into a Kedushin relationship, and she would require a get to undo that. But she can't go ahead and back out. Now, Esv Rav Huna Rav Asi, so Rav's students, Rav Huna, he asked Rav Asi, and some Vamila, some say it was actually Chia Bar Rav L'Rav Asi, it was Chia, the son of Rav, who asked Rav Asi from the following Braisa. The Braisa quotes a pasuk in Shemais that talks about the parasha of Mefata, of when a man seduces a girl to be intimate with him. So the pasuk says, Imoin Yimoin Avia. If the father refuses, this guy who seduced his daughter to consummate the relationship with her and to get married to her, if the father refuses for him to take now this girl who the Torah is saying that we want him to go ahead and marry this girl, because who's going to want someone that was seduced already? But if it says in the Torah that if the father refuses, then the guy can't take this girl as a wife, and then he has to pay up the 50 shkalim, which is a penalty for someone that seduces a girl. Says the Braisa, ainly, I would only know that who could refuse the marriage of the seducer to the woman that was seduced? Elavia. As the pasuk says, it's the father that's refusing. He asks Meminai, says the Braisa, how do we know that the girl herself could also refuse to be taken in the relationship now by the man who seduced her? Tamalim, that's the pasuk teaches when it's redundant and it says, im mo'in yimo'in, if refusal that he will refuse, what's the redundancy? It's to tell you, Mekam Akam, in any situation, no matter who refuses, not just the father, but even the girl herself could refuse. Now, the question on Rav Asi, the assumption was that the pasuk is coming to tell you, even when he had seduced her and he had an act of bia, of cohabitation with this girl, that he was seducing her, that it should be a kedushin. And to say that, whoa, so the pasuk is saying that she could retract, not only the father could say, wait a second, this is my daughter who I have control over her until she becomes an adult, and I get to say who she gets engaged to. So the pasuk is saying he could refuse. Now that we knew up until now. But similarly, the question is we're asking on Rav Asi, we see like our teacher Rav, that it's not only the father, but it's even her, because the pasuk is saying, as the Braisa is elaborating, that she could also refuse. What's she refusing? She's refusing this kedushin as a minor that she already received in the act of bia from her seducer. She's saying now, Imma'in, I'm refusing, I don't want it. And we see that she could refuse. So that refutes Rav Asi, who says that the only one that could refuse is the father and not the girl who's receiving the kedushin. So Amalahu Rav. So Rav, who they were supporting, whether it was Rav Huna or his son Chia Barav, he said to them, Leitezlu Basar Ipcha. Don't go and try to bring a support from something that can be turned the opposite, something that's not. Because Yochel Lishnuye Luchu, Rav Asi could answer to you, and that is not difficult for him from what you're asking, because the Pasuk is talking about, you could just as easily interpret the Pasuk where that he had seduced her and he had to act to be with her, not for the purposes of creating a Kedushin. And since there was no Kedushin, so that's why she could refuse. But he could just tell you that if she had received the Kedushin as a minor, that she cannot refuse, and it's only the father that could. Now, that the Gemara asks, Pital Shaloi Lashem Isha's Krabai? What do you mean? Rav was saying that Rav Asi could answer that the Pasuk told him that he seduced her, and just for an act of Bia, not that Bia should be, as we opened up this Mesechta, one of the three ways that you could be Mekadosh Isha. No, he was doing it just for Bia purposes. Now, that the Gemara asks, would we have to say in the Pasuk, and so too as the Braisa darshans, that the father and the girl could refuse? What do you mean? Why would we think that the act of bia that this seducer did with her would make her forbidden to other people to say as if it's a kedushin? What do you mean? You're saying that it's not a bia l'shem kedushin. So why would we say, oh, they're refusing as if they're uprooting something? What are they uprooting? He didn't do an act of kedushin. It wasn't l'shem ishes. It was an act of znus. So then why would I need a pasuk to say that he could refuse and so too as a drasha that she could refuse? What are they refusing? There's nothing to refuse. He was just mizana with her. So go ahead, go on your own way. What does it require, an act of miyun? So Amr of Nachma Yitzchak, he says that the pasuk's not coming to say something that's permitted to do, meaning as if it's permitted for them to get out of this relationship with him. Because you're right, there is no relationship over here, as the Gemara is answering for Rav Asi. It wasn't being done for the purposes of a kedushin, this act of bia. But rather, Leimer, what the Pasuk is coming to say, that when it's darshening imoin yimoin that she could also refuse, it's coming to say shemishalim kenas kemefuta, that he'll have to pay the penalty of the 50 shkalim, just like the halacha is in general regarding the penalty of someone that seduces a girl, where the pasuk had written it that when does he have to pay? I mean, there's two options that could happen over here. He seduced this girl. Now, look what you did to my daughter. No one's going to want to marry her. So there's two options. Either the seducer has to go out and take her as a wife, then he doesn't have to pay, or the victims say, no way, we don't want you to be the husband, and then he has to pay the 50 shekel. Now, the pasuk writes it in mom yimoin avia, that if the father refuses, no way, you're not taking my daughter now after what you did, then he has to pay the 50 shekel. What the Bryce is teaching from the pasuk is that the same thing would apply if the girl refuses. If the girl refuses, that's what it's coming to say. And that is, as Tosis elaborates, that obviously it's like Rav had explained for Ravasi, that the pasuk's talking about that he had seduced her not for the purposes of Ishas. Now, in spite of that, there's a chiddush in saying that she could also stop it. Meaning, not, of course, to stop. Stop what? There's no kedushin over here. There was no act of Ishas. It's just that by her refusal, will then mandate that he'll have to pay the penalty. In other words, just like the halacha is, the Torah says that when does the mefata have to pay the penalty when the father refuses, so too when she refuses, even if she'll end up actually getting married to him. And that is because her refusal, as Taisa says, definitely doesn't help that she doesn't have to get married to him. Because the father, if he wants, he can marry off his daughter to whoever he wants to. And that would include the seducer. So she can't hold it back. But again, what the Gemara is answering is, what it helps by her refusal is to say that he'll have to, just like if the father refuses. And here he's maybe not refusing, but just like when the father refuses, he has to pay the penalty. Here when she refuses to go, no, Tati, I am not getting married to this guy. And he's like, you are getting married to this guy. But by her refusal, makes him have to pay the penalty of the 50 shekel, even if she'll end up getting married to him, because as Ravasi explains, as Rav says, you could explain the pasuk like that, and therefore don't bring a proof against him from here, because it's talking about that it's a refusal for the payment of the penalty, but not as a refusal to go ahead and get married, because the father, after this, you're right, there wasn't an act of Ishas, of Kedushin with this Bia, but the father could go ahead and marry her off to the seducer, but he'll still have to pay that money. Now, on that, Omri Rav Yosef, so Rav Yosef said, to support this interpretation, he says, Ilhachi, if that's the case, that this is how you translate the pasuk of what is coming to say that she could also refuse, so hainu d'tanina, so then this is exactly what we learned in the Braisa. The pasuk before that says, and this is in Shemois Chavbeis, pasuk Tezvav, it says, if chiyifata ish besula, if a man will seduce a virgin, ashaloy rasa, which is not engaged, v'shachav ima, and he's going to lay with her, so the pasuk says, mohar yimarenu loy li'isha, that he should go ahead and do maher, which is to create a ksuba to do kedushin and take her in, as a wife. Now, what you see from the pasuk is, says the Braisa, shetzricha emeni kedushin, that he has to go ahead and do an act of kedushin with this girl that he had seduced. Now, on that says Rabbi Yosef, now if you're going to say, v'impita l'shum ishes, if you interpret the pasuk, that the original act of bia that he had seduced her for was he convinced her, let's get married and let's do the kedushin through this act of bia, well then kedushin lamali, then why do you need a new act of kedushin as the Bryce is learning up in the pasuk? Obviously, says Rav Yosef, that it's like Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak having translated the pasuk, that it's not talking about regarding getting married or not, that's what the refusal is, because the bia that he did with her in the story of the seducer in the Torah was not l'shem ishes, and that's why even if they go ahead and they will get married, he would require a new act of kedushin. Now, Amalei Abaya, Abaya said to Rav Yosef, no, you cannot prove Rav Nachman Yitzchak's interpretation from this pasuk and the Braisa of Mor Yimirenu L'Elisha, because you could say, Tzrichi Kedushin, the reason why she needs a new Kedushin, I mean, in other words, says Abaya, I could really tell you that the pasuk is talking about that he originally had seduced her for the purposes of it being Kedushin. And therefore, there's no riot of Nachman Yitzchak. So why do you need a new act of Kedushin if the original act of the Bia was Kedushin and they're continuing the relationship? Is because we need it ladas avia. As we said, that the kedushin of a katana is not a valid kedushin. You need the father's consent. And maybe the father is not going to be agreeable. And that's why to create a definite kedushin to continue now that they're agreeing that she should get married to her seducer, that's why it would require more yimelen l'isha, as the Braisa says, that she needs to have a new act of kedushin here with the consent of the father to create a kedushin. And therefore there's no raya here to be, say, exactly like Ravasi to interpret the pasuk. But ultimately, that's what the Gemara concludes with. This machlek is between Rav and Ravasi, that there's no proof if what's the halacha by a minor that got engaged without her father's consent, where again, we said we have to be concerned maybe he's going to be agreeable or not. But either way, Ravasi said that she cannot back out now, and we just wait on his word. Whereas Rav had said that no, bein hi bein aviyah could back out and retract before the father's agreeable, she could undo what she had done with her acceptance of Kiddushin. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the halachas of Kiddushin. So the Mishnah says, Ha'imer le'isha, if a man says to a woman, Hiskatcha li b'tmarazu, has a bunch of dates out in front of him, and he says, you see this date? I want you to become engaged to me with this date. And then he says, Hiskatcha li b'zu, and then he goes, takes another date, and he says, I want you to become engaged to me with this one. Now, says the Mishnah, Im yesh pa'achas mehen shava pruta, mekudeshes, if any one of these dates that he said, I want you to be engaged to me with this date, I want you to be engaged to me with this date, I want you to be engaged to me with this date, if any one of them is worth a shava pruta, which is the minimum amount of value that the object that the kedushin is happening with has to be worth, so then she'll be engaged. But vim lav einu mekudeshes, but if neither one of them are worth a shava pruta, she's not going to be engaged, even if the sum total of all of them are a shava pruta, because since he said the word hiskachi by each and every date separately, so he's creating a separate act of kedushin with each one, and they cannot combine with the rest. So at least one of them has to be worth a shava pruta for her to be engaged. Now, however, let's say he didn't repeat the word hiskachi every time. Rather, he says, I want you to be engaged to me with this date. And then he goes, bezu, with this one. Ubezu, and with this one. Ubezu, and with this one. So then says the Mishnah, im yashava pruta bekula mikudeshes, then if it's worth a shava pruta, if with the sum total of all of them, then she's engaged. But vimlav ain't mekudeshes. But if not, she's not engaged, as Igmo will explain, since he didn't say the word hiskacha by each one individually, so then he's considering it one big act of kedushin, and therefore then you could combine them all together to be considered the minimum value of a shava pruta. Now the Mishnah concludes, ha'isoy cheles rishayin rishayin. Now as we describe the cases, he has a bunch of dates, and he's giving them and trying to use them for kedushin purposes. So the Mishnah says, if as he gave her the dates, she was continuously eating them one by one. Now the Gemara will explain, is this going back on the Reisha, when he said the word Iskacha, but each one individually? Or is this going on the second case, the last case of the Mishnah, which was that he didn't say Iskacha, but each one individually, which we consider that as one big act of Kedushin? And then what's the reason of this halacha? But the Mishnah says that if she was eating it one by one as he gave it to her, then Einu Mekudeshe, she's not going to be engaged, until at least one of them will have its own value of a pruta, but if not, even if the sum total is a shava pruta, she will not be engaged. Now the Gemara first asks, as we mentioned this in the previous daf, man tana hiskachi hiskachi, who is the tana of our Mishnah that says that only if by each date individually did he say the word become engaged to me with this one and become engaged to me with this one, only then will it be considered that they're all individual acts of kedushin. But like in the second case of the Mishnah, but if he doesn't say the word is gachi by each one, rather he says, become engaged to me with this one, and with this one, and with this one, bazoo, 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 that then it's not individuating it into separate acts of kedushin, and then actually then it's going to combine to be worth a shava pruta. Who is that Tana? Amar Rabbi says, Reb Shimon, it's Reb Shimon that's brought in Masechta Shavuos, Daf Lamed Vav Amud Beis, regarding a case when five people are claiming to a guy that you have our deposit, and he says, I swear I don't have yours, and I don't have yours, and I don't have yours. So Reb Shimon says that he's not going to be chayiv more than one carbon for the false oath, because the Amr, he says that ad sheyemir shvu l'kol echad ve'echad. The only way he'll be chayiv for each one individually, which generally for each denial of a deposit that you swear on, you chayiv a separate carbon for the shvua. Here he holds that it's only when you say the word I swear to each one individually that will create it into a separate act of a shvua, and then you'll be chayiv on each one. But if not, if you said only one time the word shvua, it's one big shvua to be chayiv only one. That's the same halacha in our Mishnah, where only if he says his kachi each one individually is it a separate act of kedushin. But if he didn't, then it's one big act of kedushin, and therefore it could combine to be worth a shava pruta. Now, then the Mishnah concluded by saying, so it went to the second case, which is bezu, bezu, bezu. Then if you didn't say the word iskacha, but each one individually, but you said, become engaged to me with this one and this one and with this one. Said the Mishnah, yesh bekul and shava pruta. Then if all of them have a worth of a pruta, that's going to work. Chulu, then etc., which is referring to the last part of the Mishnah that said, now if she was eating it one by one, then it's only going to work for kedushin if at least one of them has its own value of a shava pruta. Now that the Gemara asked, as we mentioned, the Mishnah, ahai, on which of these two cases of the Mishnah is this last case where it says Hoisa Echeles, if she was eating them one by one, that it's referring to that you have to have at least one of them being worth a Shavah Pruta on its own. Which case is it going? So the Gemara explains, Ilei Ma'aresha, if it's going back on the first case of the Mishnah, which was when he said Hiskachi, 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 but each one, he said a separate act of Kedushin. So then the question is, my Iriyah Echeles, then why is it, what's the Mishnah telling us regarding if she eats them one by one, then each one, then at least one of them has to have its own value of a pruta. If it's going back on the case when he said a separate word Hiskachi in each one, then Nafila Menachas Nami. Then even if it's laying there and she didn't eat it, even then you wouldn't be able to combine them all together. You would need to have at least one of them to be worth its own pruta. The Hiskachi li bezukama, because as we explained in the Mishnah, he said the term Hiskachi be each one individually, which as we said, that's the Tanav Mishnah, which is Reb Shimon, that they're considered separate acts of Kedushin anyway. So even if you didn't eat it, you would have to have that each one would be worth, that one of them at least would have to be worth a Shavah Pruta to create an act of Kedushin. So what are we being mechadish? What more are we saying? That, oh, and if she ate it, it has to be. What do you mean? Even if you didn't eat it, you would have to have at least one of them being the Shavah Pruta, and then you cannot combine them. So Ella says the Gemara, Asefa. What would you say? It's going on the second case of the Mishnah, which again considered it all the dates as one big general act of Kedushin, because he didn't say the separate word Hiskachi by each date. Now, on that is what the Mishnah is concluding and saying, but however, if she eats them one by one as he's giving them to her, then it's only if you have one of them being worth a Shavah Pruta, then she's going to be engaged. In contrast, if she didn't eat it, which that's what the Mishnah said, then you wouldn't have to have in one of them a Shavah Pruta, you could combine them all together. Now, the difficulty with this, if it's going on the Seifa, is it sounds like Vafila Bakamaisa. It said that as long as one of the dates are worth a pruta, that will create a kedusha. Now, it sounds like that even if the first date or the second date, which was he gave her 30 dates, sounds like that as long as one of them, whether it's the first or second one, was worth a pruta, even if the last one was not worth a pruta, she'll be engaged. On that as the Gemara, but v'hamil v'hi, but that is a loan. In other words, since the kedusha is only concluded when she receives all the dates, because, again, that's as we explained before, he created all these dates into one big act of Kedushin. Because he said, as the Gemara had explained, that's why you could combine them all together to be a Shavah Pruta, because he only said one time the word Iskach, and he said Bezu, 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 Bezu. They're all continuous from that one act of Kedushin. Now, she already ate up the first ones way before the act of Kedushin was concluded, which is only after he gives her all the dates. Now, hence, that date which she already ate up is not around anymore. How'd you eat that? It wasn't your kedushin yet. It was still the man's dates, because it's only her kedushin for her to merit in it. Only when he finally finishes the act of kedushin, which is when he gives her all the dates. This that she ate it, she owes him that date now. Maybe then later when he's finished, he'll be meichlet. But the point is, it's a loan. She owes him this. If she owes him this, then he's not giving her anything to create a kedushin with, because the act of kedushin cannot be with something that she owes him and saying, okay, it's okay, because then he's not giving her anything. He has to give her something that you cannot be mekadesh with a milva, with a loan. So therefore, how do we understand if it's even going in the case of the Seifa? You said it's good if any one of the dates is worth a Shavah Pruta. Why? I understand if the last one, because that's when you're finishing and that creates the kedushin. Oh, so the last one, that's when you're creating it, that's a Shavah Pruta, you're creating a Kedushin. But the first or the second one, that was already long gone before the Kedushin took effect. So that's something that she already owed him, that's a milva. You can't be Mekadosh with a milva. So how do we understand the fine halacha of the Mishnah? If it's on the Reisha, why? What's the Chiddush of saying that it's that she ate it, that you need a Shavah Pruta, even if it's just laying there? Because each is anyways a separate act of Kedushin. And if it's going on the Seifa, on the second case, then how do we understand how it actually is going to be a Kedushin, even if one of them is worth a Shavah Pruta, which refers to even the first or second one? It shouldn't be a Kedushin. It's a Milva. So Amr Rabbi Yechonin commented regarding this conundrum. He said, Hari Shulchan, Vahari Basa, Vahari Sakin. We have the table, we have the meat, we have the knife, ve'ein lo nalechel, and we don't have a mouth to eat. In other words, here we have our Mishnah, and we don't know how to explain it. It's very difficult. Each one, whether Reish or Seifa, is challenging. But the Gemara does give, actually, two approaches. Rav Shmuel Amar Tavayu, they both say that lo'il ma'reisha, the final halacha of the Mishnah is going back on the Reisha, which is a separate term of Hiskachi on each separate date. Now, then the question was, so then what's the chiddush in that she ate it, that it has to be a shavah peruta? Even if you didn't eat it, you can't combine them all together. You have to have each, at least one of them, being its own value of a shavah peruta. So that they say, that we didn't have to say that it's going to be a shavah peruta from one of them. In other words, we don't have to say that if they're just laying there the dates, that if there's at least a value of a pruta in one of them, then it's going to be a kedushin iloi, that if not worth a pruta, it's not going to work because it can't combine because they're all separate acts of kedushin. So we understand it's not going to work, which is the case of the resha, if one of them is not worth a shava pruta. But what the Mishnah was saying at the end was, but if she ate them one by one, since this is something that she gets immediate gratification from, in other words, the pleasure was so prepared, and moreover, she showed that she really desired it. How does she show it? Because she was eating it. So Ema, that's what the Mishnah was teaching us. I would have thought to say, Gomru umakanya nafsha, that she's concluding and giving herself over as a wife for the date, which, yes, each date will be its own separate act of kedushin, but I would have thought to say that even if the date is not even worth a shava pruta, that it would be a kedushin. Because although usually the minimum is a shava pruta, because a woman says, I'm not getting married for something less than a shava pruta, and that's how the Gemara explained in the beginning of the Masechta, it has to be at least something of substance, at least a shava pruta. Now, but here she's showing that she does want the date, and she is agreeable to kedushin, even though the date, which is a separate act of kedushin, is less than a shava pruta. So that's Kamash Malan. That's what the Mishnah concludes by saying, that no, even when she's eating, a woman does not get engaged for less than a Shava Pruta. So although she's eating it and she's showing she's liking it, if it's not worth a Shava Pruta, it's just like she owes now the money that she ate and consumed that date, but it will not be a Kedushin unless at least one of the dates is going to be worth a Pruta. That's one approach. Rabbi Amar, he says, Loyal Ma Seifa. He gives the other approach. He says that it's actually qualifying the halacha of the Seifa. Now, but then the difficulty was, then how could it, you say any one of the dates? But the problem is it's one big act of kedushin, as we said, because you didn't say a separate word of biskacha by each one. Now, by the time you conclude the kedushin, those dates you ate a long time ago are not around anymore. They're just owed from the woman to the man because it was like a deposit by her. It wasn't kedushin yet, and she ate it, so she owes him that money. So that's a milva. You cannot create a kedushin with a milva. How could you say if even one of the first ones was worth a shava pruta, it's a kedushin? So Rabbi says, yeah. What does the Mishnah mean when it says, regarding the case of when she ate, until at least one of them is worth a Shava Pruta? It means, when it says one of them, it doesn't mean just any one of them, it means the most important one of them, which is the last one of them. If the last one of them is worth a Pruta, that's when the Kedushin is taking effect. If at that point in time he's giving her that last date, and that's worth a Shava Pruta, then, because since it's going on the case of the Sefer, when it's only then that it's concluded, that will go ahead and create an act of Kedushin, because now when he's doing Kedushin, he's giving her something worth a Pruta. But, of course, if she's eating, then they cannot combine the whole thing, because she ate them separately, and it's not around anymore. Moreover, that's a milva, you can't go ahead and use that. So rather, it means regarding the last one. That's where Rabbi translates the words ba'achas men, meaning ba'achreino. Now, Amar Rava comments, and he says, Shemamino midrabami. So we could infer from this halacha of Rabbi Ami that he gave this answer, plus three halachas. First of all, Shemami no, we could infer, HaMekadosh b'milva in Mukudeshes. If someone creates a kedushin with a loan, which is not around anymore, just a loan that was owed, does not create a kedushin. Now, how do we see that from Rabbi Ami? From the fact that he accepted the Gemara's question, which the Gemara's question which started this whole discussion was, but v'hom milvahi, it's a loan, and therefore Rabbi Ami had to say, oh, you're right. What does it mean? Ba'achas men, it means the last one. So obviously he holds that the Gemara's question was correct and that one cannot create a kedushin with a milva. That what she owes him, if he says, oh, it's okay, you don't have to pay it back to me, he's not giving her anything because milva lo yitza nitna. It's hers. You're not giving her that. Yes, she owes you, but forgiving that is not giving her anything. And therefore, you're right, Rabbi Ami agreed. It can't mean one of the first ones. It means the last one. So obviously he holds that mekadesh b'milva is not mekudeshes. Second of all, Ushmamina, we could infer from his halacha, Hamakadesh bimilva upruta, if someone engages a woman with two things, he says, first of all, what you owe me in that loan, I'll get engaged to you for that. You won't have to pay me back the loan. And moreover, I'm giving you here a pruta to create a kedushin. So he's giving her two things. What we infer from his halacha is that when she accepts both of those, daita apruta. Her intention, her focus primarily for the kedushin is on the coin, is on what he's giving her now. Now, from the fact that he had interpreted the Mishnah that as long as the last one, the last date that he's giving her, again, he said ba'achas men means ba'achreina, is worth a shavu prud, then she'll be engaged. Now, that's in spite of the fact that the first dates that she had already eaten that he had given her are a milva. Now, as we explained in the Mishnah, he's really being mekadesha with all the dates that he gave her. Because as we said, that all these dates that he said, bezeh, 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 since he didn't say the word iskachi to separate them, they're all considered, as we said in the case of the second case of the Mishnah, when they're all laying there and she didn't eat them, we said that they could all combine to be a shava pruta and then she'll be mekadeshes. Obviously that the kedushin is going on all the dates. Now, even so, even though she ate up the first dates, which now essentially you have a case of where he's giving her a milva and a pruta, because he's giving her all the dates for kedushin. As we explained, it's all one big kedushin. Now, the last date is the pruta. It's what he's giving her right now when the kedushin is taking effect. But the first dates, which are also part of this kedushin, are already a milva. It's something that she owes him. And still we're saying, Rabbami's saying, that she'll be engaged with the last dates, obviously, because daita apruta. When she's hearing kedushin, it's what he's giving her now, which is the pruta, which is what's worth that value of a pruta, which is the last date, even though he's also giving her a milva, that you could say maybe her das is on the milva, and she, oh, I don't owe you anymore, then it wouldn't be a kedushin, because you cannot be mekadesh ben milva. What we're hearing is, when you're giving both, her das is on the pruta, which is the last date, if it's worth a shavu pruta, and therefore it's going to create a kedushin. Now, as we continue on Talmud Beis, Ushma Minoah, moreover, the third halacha we infer from his statement is that mo'is ba'alma, general money. In other words, whenever you have, quote, a kedushin that doesn't materialize into kedushin, we don't say, okay, so then obviously he meant to gift it to her. Rather, we say that it's considered a deposit, and therefore chayzrim, it actually has, it goes back, she owes it, and it goes back to the man. Now, where do we see that from Abami? That's what the halacha was saying, according to his interpretation, that when she ate up the first dates, they were considered as a milva, as a loan. Why? Because since she ate it up already, and at the time when kedushin is finally taking effect, which is when the last date is finally given, then he's not creating kedushin with that, because it's not around anymore. You cannot create a kedushin with a milva. So that's what was saying, that it's considered like a deposit, because she already ate it up. And now that she ate it up, it's not a deposit anymore. Now she owes him that, which is considered a milva, a loan that she owes him, that she ate it up. Now, the reason being is because had the halacha been that the money that he gave her, if it's not going to take effect as kedushin, then it's considered actually as a gift, which means to say that if, let's say, kedushin is never concluded, then she doesn't have to give it back because it was a gift, then actually it would be difficult, because now that he is concluding the kedushin, so then he's not being mekadesh b'milva with a loan. And moreover, it's not going to be considered as a gift because it was for the purposes of being kedushin that he gave it to her, and now he is concluding kedushin, and therefore it should be considered as a kedushin. So obviously, that's the third inference of his halacha, that obviously because it was considered not as a gift, but rather as a pekadon, as a deposit, to hold on to it to see if I'm going to conclude kedushin. And therefore, since before the kedushin was ever done, she already ate it up, so then it already transferred from a deposit, which you misappropriated and you ate it up, into a milva. And that's why she actually owes it to him and has to give it back to him. Because the kedushin is not happening with the milva, it's actually happening with the last pruta. So those are three halachas that you can infer from the halacha of Rabbami. Now, a related discussion, now Tosfos brings, although it would sound like it's the same exact discussion, it's a little different. Itma, we learned, HaMekadesh HaChayseh, if someone gets engaged to his sister, now you cannot get engaged to your sister, Kedushin is not even Tosfos, because there's a Chiv Misa by someone that would get married to his sister. So it's not really a Kedushin, but again, it's similar to the previous Gemara's discussion, where it was given for the purposes of Kedushin, but it doesn't end up being a Kedushin. Now that's where Tosfos says a little different, because there he was attempting, at least there was a doubt that it would end up being Kedushin, but then she ended up eating it, so it didn't turn into Kedushin. That was the Machlokes, that was the discussion regarding, okay, so then it's going to be considered as a deposit, not as a matana. Here it's a little bit different, it's where he knows it's not Kedushin. So what do you mean to say when you're getting engaged and you're giving your sister money and saying that you're giving her Kedushin? So that's where we have the following Machlokes. Rav Amar Mo'is Chayzim, he says the money goes back to the brother who gave the kedushin to his sister. Ushmul amamas matan, he says, no, it's a gift. So that's seemingly what sound like the same discussion, but again, as we explained, it's a little different. So Rav says it's a deposit, and therefore it goes back. And Shmuel says, no, it's a gift. So the Gemara explains, Rav amamo is chayzim, Rav says the money goes back to the brother, Because adam yedei she in kedushin tayfs machayis. That person knows that you can't get married to your sister. V'gamav anasin l'shem pekadin. And what did he really mean to say when he says, "Here, sis, I want to get engaged to you," and he gives her a bunch of money? It was just as a deposit for her to hold on to, but it wasn't, of course, for kedushin, and therefore she has to give it back to him later on. Now, then the question is, so v'lemo l'shem pekadin. So what's he making this whole game and saying, "Here, I want to get engaged to you. Here, take this beautiful ring." And it's really, he just wants to give her a deposit. Why didn't they tell her, "Here, hold on to this for me"? So the Gemara says, "Sovo lemekabla," because he would think that she's not going to want to take it. "I don't want to watch your stuff for you. Oh, you're engaging me? Oh, how sweet." But again, it's really just a ploy from the brother for her to hold on to his stuff. So that's why he says, "Be engaged to me." But he knows it's not an engagement, and therefore she has to give it back to him, the ring, when he wants it. Now, Ushmul Sava mois matana. He says, no. The money that he gave her to, quote, get engaged to her is a gift. Because again, adam yudei she'in kedushin tevsin ba'achayse. A person knows that you cannot engage your sister. Why was he giving it to her? She needs money, and so he's just playing a game with her so that she should, like, you know, "Oh, you want to engage me? Oh, how sweet." But he's really giving it to her as a gift. Now, so then the Gemara asks, the name of Lola Shematana, so what's this whole game? Why don't you just give it to her for a gift? "Hey, I want to give you a gift." Why does he have to say, "Oh, let's get engaged"? So the Gemara says, "Sava kasiva la milsa," that no, the brother would think that she's going to be embarrassed. A gift? Why? You think I don't have enough stuff? Well, what? So she's not going to want to take it. So that's why he plays this game and says, "Oh, let's get engaged." But again, that's their machlekes regarding that. What is his intention when he knows that it cannot create kedushin? Is it that he wants to give her a deposit and therefore she has to give it back, or is it that he wants to give her a gift and he just knows she's not going to take it and therefore he dresses it up as a kedushin? Now, Masa Ravina. Ravina asked on Shmuel's opinion, when you know it's not going to work, so you're really gifting it, from the following Mishnah Masechta Chala. The Mishnah says, "Hamafrish chalosai kemach." There's a halacha when you have a dough, when there's a certain amount, as we'll explain shortly, of dough, then you have to separate a portion of that as chala, which is one of the matnas kuna, the gifts that go to the kahanim, and you give that what's called chala, which is that portion that's taken off from the dough, and that's given to the kohen. Says the Mishnah, "If hamafrish chalosai kemach," if someone has it not as dough yet, it's just flour, and in that state he separates that amount of chala to give it to the kohen. Says the Mishnah, first of all, ein chala. It does not have the halachic status as chala to fulfill your obligation, because as the pasuk says, it has to be reishis arisei seichem, the first of your dough, and it's not dough yet, it's just flour. Moreover, v'gezel b'yad kohen. If the kohen doesn't return it to the owner, it's considered theft, because it's not the matnas kahuna of chala yet. That's what the Mishnah says. On that, Ravina asked on Shmuel, "V'amai gezel b'yad kohen," why is it considered theft in the hands of the kohen? What do you mean? Well, let's say the same logic Shmuel had said with the getting engaged to the sister. Neima, you should say, "Adam yudeya she'im afrishin chala kemach." Everybody knows you cannot separate chala from flour. "V'nosan l'shema tono," and it was given as a gift. Shmuel, that's Shmuel's same logic. You know you can't give it to the kohen, but kohen's poor. Doesn't have enough money. I'm not at the stage of, let's say, dough yet. I only have flour. But I'll give him, quote, "Here, take some challah," where we know that it's just a ploy, but you wouldn't take it any other way, so why are we saying that it's considered theft? Why don't you consider it as a gift? So the Gemara says, you're right, that is Shmuel's logic, and maybe it should apply. But Shani Hasim, there in that Mishnah Masechet Chala, it's different. In other words, that the rabbis required the kohen to give it back to the owner, even if, let's say, it would be that maybe the homeowner wants to give him as a gift, we consider it theft and he has to give it back because the nafik churvimina, because it could cause terrible consequences, and that's why you have to give it back. Why? What could happen? Zimnin de isli l'koyin pachis mechamish revoim kemach. It could happen that the koyin has, as we said, maybe he's a poor koyin, he has less than 5 quarters of flour. Now, Rashi goes through a lengthy description to explain, because what we're mentioning with 5 quarters of flour is because that's the minimum measurement of how much flour that you have to take off the halach of challah. If you have less than that, you don't have to separate challah. So Rashi goes through a description of what is it, the shear of challah, how do we know that it's 5 quarters of flour? So he describes as follows. And this is from the Gemara in Masechet Seirin that discusses at length, where it's a reference to 5 lugim in tzipori, which that is the obligation of the amount of dough to be chayav and challah, which is 6 lugin that were the Yerushalmi measurements, which are 7 from that which was the Jews had in the Midbar, which is called the Midbarios, which was 7 lugim and an egg, and 1/5 of an egg. In other words, there were three types of measurements throughout the history of Klal Yisrael. Originally, when they were in the desert, there was a certain amount that was in that measurement of, let's say, a lug. Then later on, they actually expanded that measurement, as we'll shortly explain, by a sixth, which therefore, that's a lesser amount, meaning you need less amounts because the measurements themselves are bigger of the Yerushalmi. Then at a later point in time, they expanded that again a sixth, which was in Sipairi. So what we're describing over here of 5 quarters of Kemach is reference to the last measurements that they had, which are the Lugin Sipairim, where you need to have 5 Lugin, that's the quarters are, each one is a Lug, because it's a quarter of the higher measurement than that. So 5 Lugin is what we're saying is the measurement of the flower, that's regarding that of Tzipairi, which are actually 6 Lugin of the Yerushalmi, which is actually 7 Midbarius with an egg and a fifth of an egg. Now Rashi explains why, because as we quoted the pasuk before, the halach of challah is from Reishis Arisei Sechem, the first of your dough. Which dough is the Torah talking about? But it's talking about when the Jews were in the Midbar, in the desert, which was the month that they were eating, which was Oymer LaGalgailus, which is you have to take off the share of challah from the food that you had, which was what dough did they have? They had an Oymer for every single person, LaGalgailus for every skull, everyone got an Oymer of month. Now as Rashi goes through the calculations, he shows us how the Oymer LaGalgailus, the amount of mun that was Arisa Sechem in the Midbar, turns out ultimately to be in today's times of the Lugin Tzipairim, of the Tzipairim measurements, to be 5 Lugin, 5 quarters of flour. Because he says as follows, he says the Oymer is a Sirisa Eifa, is a tenth of an Eifa. Now an Eifa itself is 3 saw, a saw is 6 kavim, a kav is 4 Lugin, which is known as Askelav Gudu, Askelav. And the gudu, if one makes those as kilav, meaning the aleph and the samach is the eifa and the saw, and the gudu is, you're going to calculate that it's going to be 3 for the saw, is going to be 1 eifa and so on. That's as kilav gudu, which is what we just calculated now. So it comes out that an eifa is 72 lugin. Now, a tenth of that 72 lugin, again, because an eifa is 72 lugin, and we want a tenth of the eifa, which is what the oimer legalgalus was, because that's how much an oimer is. So a tenth of 70 is 7 lugin. So you're left with 2 lugin, which are 12 beitzim, which are 12 eggs. A tenth of that is a beya and a fifth of a beya. So it comes out, the final calculation is that an oimer, which is the tenth of the eifa, is 7 lugin and a beya and a fifth of a beya. Now that's according to the calculations of how it was in the Midbar. But then in Yerushalayim, later point in time in history, they increased the measurements by a sixth. So then the Kavan got bigger and the Lugan got bigger. And when it says a sixth, Rashi explains it means from the outside it was a sixth, meaning it's internally a fifth bigger. So ultimately, the first 6 Lugan, you could fit into 5, because again, that's how the measurements had expanded. So what used to be 6, now you could fit into 5. So you're left with a lug midbari, meaning the original measurements of the lug, and a beya and a fifth, because that's what it was. It was 7 lugin and a beya and a chaymish. But we said 6 of those 7 fit into the 5 of the Yerushalmi. And then you're left with a lug midbari, a beya and a chaymish, which is really a lug Yerushalmi. How so? So Rashi explains, he says, because a lug midbari is 6 beitzim. Now, if you take 5 large beitzim, that's the lug Yerushalmi. Now you're still lacking 1 large beya. So you take that beya and the fifth of a beya of the midbari that you left with, and that equals to a beya Yerushalmis. So now that because you have the fifth of the beya, which is a sixth milabar, which you add on to the beya midbaris to conclude the measurements of the beya Yerushalmis. So that's where you end up with that 7 and a beya and a chaymish ends up turning into 6 lugin Yerushalmis. Now, those 6 lugin Yerushalmis are Chamesh Tzipurim, because in Tzipurim they add on another 6 of the Yerushalmis, so that comes to the conclusion of the measurement of Chamesh's Revoim Kemach of 5 Revoim, which is another term for Lugin. You end up with 5 lugin of Tzipurim, which is the measurements of today. Now, so it's regarding that halacha that we're discussing in the Gemara, that it could be sometimes that the Kohen will have less than the shear of the shear of Challah. He doesn't have 5 lugin Tzipurim. Now, but when this Yisrael gives him the flour, quote, as challah, he's going to think, so it's challah. Now, but really, and therefore, if it's challah, that's not going to combine with the flour that he has to make it over the top of the minimum measurement of taking off challah, because that's challah, that already had separated, that is the challah was separated from something else. It's not going to combine with the amount of flour that he has to push it over the top to make it the chamesh rus reboim of kemach. So therefore, v'hai olish le bahadi adadi, so now he's going to be kneading them together, he's going to take that flour, mix it with his dough, which is going to push him over the chamesh rus reboim kemach mark, but uksav niskan isasa, he's going to think that his dough is okay, because it's not going to make it have to take off challah, because you can't put challah on other dough to make it have to take off challah. He's going to end up eating it as tevel because his own dough actually has to have challah taken off it, and they never took it off, which makes it as tevel. Like when you don't take off truma, challah is a certain type of a truma. That is the Gemara's answer why, yes, although you could say, like Ravina was asking from that Mishnah, that according to Shmuel, that we know it's not challah, so why don't we say that he was gifting it, like when you're getting engaged to a sister. Says the Gemara, you're right. Of course he would want to gift it, but we don't let that happen because then it could cause problems halachically for the challah of the kohen. Now, that the Gemara asked, how can you say that the kohen's going to make that mistake? But you said, even in your question, Adam Yedea She'in Mafrishin Chala Kemach, you said everybody knows that you can't separate challah from flour. And that actually was part of the Gemara's question, to say, okay, let's say it was given as a gift. So how can you say the reason why I don't give it as a gift is because the kohen's going to make a mistake and think, oh, that's challah, meaning it's already kosher. And therefore, it's not going to add to combine from my tevel, which is less than the mashir, to make it more. But how can you say that? Everyone knows that it's not challah, so how could he entertain the thing that it's really challah, and that's why it's going to cause this stumbling block and he's going to eat it as tevel? So that the Gemara answers, no, yudeya ve'en yudeya. Yeah, everybody knows, but they don't know. What does that mean? Everybody knows, ask any person that's making dough, you know you don't take off challah from flour. Now, but ve'en yedeo, but still the kohen doesn't know exactly why. He thinks, what's the reason? Why is it that we don't take off challah from flour just when it's dough? Mishum tircha de kohen is because we don't want the kohen to have to go through the effort to have to turn it into dough. You, the balabais, you first make it into dough and give the challah something ready to bake. Give him dough. Now, but v'tircha de kohen achilte. But the kohen's going to think, okay, you know what? I'm moichel on the exertion, on the effort that I have to do. I'll take it in the flour state. But he's going to think that it really is challah. It's just that they said that don't take it in flour so that the kohen doesn't have to go through the effort. But if he's okay with it, he thinks he could be moichel on it. But he's going to think it's challah. And there is going to think that it's not tevel. But it really is not challah. And therefore, it's going to cause a stumbling block. And that's why we don't let it, the kohen hold on to it, he has to give it back. Now, however, on this, the Gemara asks, but why? Okay, so it's not really challah. But why did they require the kohen to have to give it back because of this problem? Why don't they say as follows? Someone that separated challah from his flour, let's say that it is challah. But to have a truma, let it be considered, quote, truma. In other words, because as Shmuel had said, and this is the continuation of the question, that the one who's giving it had concluded he wants to give it as a gift to the kohen, even though it's not really challah. Now, just b'loy toichel, that the kohen shouldn't eat it, until that the kohen himself separates challah from somewhere else, because it's not really challah, and it really will push him over the minimum shear of having to take off his own challah. But the question is, you said that he has to give it back because it might cause this problem. Why? Didn't we learn in the Mishnah Masechtas Demai very similarly type of halacha, and that we did not require him to give it back just to fix it from somewhere else? So say the same thing over here. Yeah, look, it's not challah, and he has to separate. But why do we make him give it back? Let him hold on to this gift, because Shmuel is saying that it's a person would want to gift it, and he'll fix it from somewhere else. As we learn in the Mishnah Masechtas Demai, the Mishnah there says, if someone separates truma min hanokuv al she'en hanokuv, from a pot that has a hole in the bottom which is nourishing from the ground, which is chayiv in truma, on something that doesn't have a hole on the bottom of the pot, which is biblically exempt from the halachas of truma. So on that, says the Mishnah, truma, it will have the halach of truma. Now, although definitely it's not truma, because when you separate on something that's chayiv, on something that's pater, what you're separating is not really truma. What you're separating from, for that other thing, is from something that's obligated because it's nakuv, but the thing that you're, quote, being the truma for that thing doesn't require truma midai raisa, because it doesn't have a nekev, it's not really nourishing from the ground. So what does it mean that it's truma? It means to say that the kohen doesn't have to give it back. He could keep it, quote, as truma. Now, but as the Mishnah there says clearly, but the kohen shouldn't eat it because, as we said, truthfully, it really is tevel. Because this that he got from that person, from the nakuv one, which are produce that are obligated in truma, it really is not truma. because he was giving it to the kohen as a way of exempting from that which grew in the pot that didn't have a hole in it, which is not obligated to take up truma for it. So really what he's giving to the kohen is really tevel, because it's only not tevel when it's truma for something, but that thing is not really obligated in truma to make this truma of it. So he can't eat, as we said, ad sheyotze leo truma maisim b'makom achar, until he goes and he then takes up trumas and maisim from somewhere else. Now, as Rashi points out, when it says b'makom achar, it doesn't mean necessarily from somewhere else. It would even be if from what he got from the Yisrael as the truma, he could separate from that itself to make it into truma. Now, but one thing the Gemara's question is that, but obviously we see that when it's not really truma, the kohen could hold on to it, but it's really tevel. No problem, we tell him to separate truma from somewhere else for that truma that was he was being given because really it's tevel. So then why don't we say the same thing over here in the Mishnah, Mesechtes Challah, especially according to Shmuel, that he said that really if a guy knows it's not going to be challah because it's coming from flour, he wants to gift it, so let it be a gift. And now he's going to make a mistake? He's not going to make a mistake. Make him take off truma, make him take off challah from somewhere else. Just like we say regarding truma in that Mishnah Mesechtes Demai. So that the Gemara answers that there's a fundamental difference. Betray money when there are two different utensils, which is like in the case of the Mishnah Mesechtes Demai, where one where it was growing in one that had a hole, was perforated, the other one didn't have a hole. Those are two different kalim. When you tell the kayin that you have to go ahead and now separate again, although, like, quote, he was giving you truma, it's not really truma, and you have to, it's really tevel, and you have to take over truma from somewhere else. So Tzoyis, he'll listen to you, because he realizes that, yeah, it's very possible that what he gave me was from one type of a pot, which was taking off truma for something else, was a different type of a pot. So he could relate to say that, okay, it could be it's not really truma, and it's really tevel, and I got to separate my own truma. So therefore, we don't make him give it back, and he'll understand, he'll take up truma somewhere else. But by one vessel, in other words, like here where we're talking about, where the Yisrael gave him challah from his flour, where it was from the same flour in one vessel for the flour that's left over there, when you're going to tell the kayin that it's not challah, and you have to go ahead and separate challah from somewhere else on the flour that he was given, Lloyd Tzoyis is not going to listen, because he's going to say, what does that mean? How could it be not like, how could it not work for what it itself is? When they're two different things, you can understand maybe there was a mistake, there are different types of things. But if the same thing, he's not going to listen to you. And that's why we mandate in the Mishnah, Mesechtes Challah, to him to give it back. Because if not, he's not going to listen. He's going to end up eating it as it is, because he's going to think, nech, it must be for sure challah, and it's really tevel. And the reason being is because it might push him over the mark to make him have five lugan tzipari, which is chayav and challah, and that's why he has to give it back. That's one approach to resolve the question that was asked on Shmuel from the Mishnah Mesechtes Challah. V'ibayisim, or if the Gemara says, what you could say is, L'oilam koyin meitzis tzayis. The truth is that regarding the koyin, he would listen. And that's because, as we find many times in Shas, kahanim are called zrizim. They're very careful in halacha, they're upstanding, and moreover, as Rashi says, that truma is only given to a koyin chaver, a koyin that's a talmud chacham, that's careful with halacha. So then the question is back, why, if Shmuel is saying that really the guy wants to gift it because he knows it's not really challah, so why is he giving it because he wants to gift it? So then why do we make the coin give it back? Why do we call it, gezel b'yad coin? It's because of the homeowner, the one that was giving it to the coin. If the coin is going to hold on to it, uksava balabayis nisak nisas, because now the homeowner, the owner of the flower is going to think, oh, now the rest of my flower has already been kashered. I took off challah. He's going to end up eating it and tell the kids he's not going to separate a new challah. He's going to think, oh, what I gave the kohen was challah. Now, it's not really true, because it's not challah. No, because it was only taken off from flour. It has to be from Maritza Seichem. Now, the Gemara asked, as it did in the previous interpretation, but you said, even in your question, that everybody knows that you can't separate challah when it's in the flour state. So why are you saying that he has to give it back so that the homeowner doesn't think that he fulfilled his obligation of challah by giving him flour when everyone knows that you can't separate challah and flour? So the Gemara answers, Yudeya ve'en Yudeya. He knows, but he doesn't know. What does that mean? Yudeya she'en mafrishin challah kemach. He knows you can't separate challah and flour. No one ever, you ever saw anyone take off a flour? No. But ve'en Yudeya doesn't know the reason why. The Sava Tarimai thinks, what's the reason why you can't mishum tircha the kayin? Because the Torah was concerned for the exertion of the kayin. Now tircha the kayin, kimlola. But look, he's not giving it back to me. He's not protesting. He's taking it. So he was meichelet. So he thinks that he has fulfilled his obligation on challah. And he's going to end up eating the rest. He's going to turn it into dough and eat it without separating challah. So it's for that concern, that's why you got to go ahead and give it back to the homeowner so that he knows that it wasn't really challah and he won't end up eating it in the state of tabu. Now, then the Gemara asks, as it did in the previous interpretation, why? Why say that? V'tahav v'truma. Let it be considered truma. Let it be, in other words, quote, challah that the kohen could hold on to. and v'yachzav v'yitrim. And then, but however, we'll make that the homeowner have to take off a second time this truma of challah. In other words, why do we make the kohen give it back to him? Because of this concern that saying that, oh, maybe it's considered truma, why don't we say that it is truma, but, and the reason is because he really wanted to gift it like Shmuel said, but he has to go out and do it again. As the Gemara says, Milo Tanan, didn't we learn that in the Mishnah Masechta's Demai, a similar type of a case, and yet we did not require the kohen to give it back because of seemingly the same type of a concern that what's going to be the homeowner is going to think he fulfilled his obligation. The Mishnah there says, the flip side of the case of, that was mentioned previously, Misha'ena Nokuv ala Nokuv, if let's say the Yisrael was taking from something that was exempt, to meaning let's say took from a pot that didn't have a hole in the bottom, and he was taking from that produce to give to the kohen, ala Nokuv, to exempt the other produce which he was holding on to, which is perforated, does have a hole, and is chayiv midereis in truma. So really, that will not fulfill it, because you can't exempt, let's say, taking something that's not obligated in truma to give to the kohen to exempt what is obligated in truma. But still, the Mishnah there says truma, it's truma, meaning the kohen could hold on to it. But v'yachzav yitrim. But then the Yisrael has to go ahead and give truma again from the one that was nakuv, because it wasn't exempted the first time around, and the reason because it was from taken from something that was in a nakuv. Now, what we see from this Mishnah is that we don't say the kohen has to give it back, that maybe the Baal HaBayis is going to say, oh, I fulfilled my obligation. Why, I got to take again? No, the kohen's holding on to it. Obviously, that I fulfilled my obligation. We don't say that concern over there. We say that he could hold on to it, but just that we have to make him do it again. So why don't we say the same thing over here in the Mishnah, Masechtas Challah? Why do we make him give it back? So the Gemara says, Ha'akimna, we already explained, and this was in the first interpretation, betray money tzoyas, when it's two different utensils, as the Mishnah, Masechtas Demai, then he'll listen. The homeowner himself will understand, okay, maybe it was a mistake. But by one vessel, he's not going to listen, and that's why, by the halacha of Mishnah Masechtas Challah, there we said that you're going to have to give it back, or else the homeowner is going to think, not the kohen, because kohen is not going to make the mistake, but the homeowner might make that mistake. Now, this, the Gemara asks, b'loy tzoyas, is it really so that if it's in the same type, the same vessel, then the Baal HaBayis is not going to listen, and he's not going to think that he has to do it over again, and that's why we make the kohen give it back? But what's not, we learn the Mishnah Masechtas Trumas that says, Hatorim kishus benimtza marav. Someone is separating truma from cucumbers, and turns out what he gave truma to the kohen was bitter. Or avatech, we're separating, giving a melon to the kohen as truma benimtza saruach. Turns out it was soured. Says the Mishnah, truma, it is truma. The yachzav yitrim, but then you have to give again truma. So even though it's 1 min, it's from one utensil of the same cucumbers, we see that it is truma and the yachzav yitrim. Why? You said when it's 1 mana, he's not going to listen to you. So why over there do we say, why don't we say you have to give it back and do it over? Why don't we say here, why are we saying that it is truma and then he just has to do it again? So I think Mar says, Shani Hasan, and there it's different by that halacha, Mishnah Masechtas Trumas, Timidei Raisa Truma Ma'al Yehi. Because there actually, in the case of where it's soured and all those cases, it actually is a valid truma. Now therefore you can't say, as we're proposing in these halachas, like the Mishnah Masechtas Challah, to make the kohen have to give it back, to make it as if it's tevel, because then he's going to mix it with the rest of his peiros, and actually that's problematic, because it actually is halachically truma, and now he's going to mix truma with the rest of his produce, which now he's not going to be able to even eat. It's going to make the whole thing forbidden to him, because it really is truma. Moreover, Rashi says, that actually the whole gezeira, like we said, of churba that's going to happen, it's not really even applicable in this case. Because even if he's, you're right, even if he's not going to listen to you, and he's not going to separate again, and he's going to eat the rest, there's no isidai raisa, because as the Gemara is quoting now, biblically it really is a valid truma. Midi Rabbi Loi, like Rabbi Loi said. Dam Rabbi Loi said, and again, that's what we're explaining, that it is valid truma, just rabbinically we say, okay, you got to do it again, because it's not appropriate. But biblically it really is truma, and that's why we're not going to go ahead and make him do it over again. Because as Rabbi Loi says, he says, Minayin l'tarimin hara al ha-yafa sh'trumasei truma. How do you know that if you take off truma from bad stuff to exempt the good produce that you have, in other words, you give into the kohen the bad stuff, how do we know that it really is halachically truma? Shem, like it says the pasuk in Bamidbar, the Torah tells you, you shouldn't carry for yourself a sin, when you take off the fatty stuff. In other words, what the inference is that if you're going to take off truma from the bad stuff to give to the kohen, for your good stuff, then you're going to be carrying sin, then you're going to be considered a sinner. So it says, don't do that so that you shouldn't be considered a sinner. So it says, Rabbi, Im einoi kadosh, if it wouldn't take effect, if it wouldn't be holy, if this really wouldn't be truma, midday raisa, when you give the kohen the bad stuff for the good that you're holding on to, well, then the si is chet lama. Then why would it be considered carrying a sin? You didn't give him truma. You didn't do any sin. You didn't give him anything. Obviously, says Rabbi Loi, mikan l'termin the ra'al yafa. From here, you could infer that when you take up truma from bad stuff or good stuff, she truma se truma. That obviously it is truma. So biblically, it really is truma. But the rabbi has penalized you if you're giving him bad stuff, melons that spoiled and soured and all these cases. So you got to do it again. But again, that's why it's not difficult. Why there we're suddenly trusting him and we're saying, oh, I fulfilled my obligation. Because even if he doesn't do it again, biblically, it's not going to be a problem of truma. And moreover, actually, if it would be worse to actually make him do it over and take it back, because then he's going to actually mix that with his old stuff. It's not truma? Okay, I'm putting it back in the pile. No, it really is biblically truma. So rabbinically, we make you do it over, and that's why it's different than those cases. And therefore, that's why it's not a difficulty on Shmuel from the Mishnah Maseches Challah, where although as he disagreed with Rav regarding when you're doing something which you know is not going to work, you're really just intending to give it as a gift. So why don't we say the same thing when you're giving a kohen challah from flour where you know it can't work, that it should be as a gift? Either one of two interpretations, either because of the mistake that the kohen's going to make, which is it's going to then push him over the minimum mark of how much a challah is, and he's going to end up eating his tevel thinking that it's really challah, because although they know that you can't take challah as flour, but they're going to think it's only so that he shouldn't have to exert himself, but if he wants to, then it could be considered challah. Or like the second interpretation, it could be a problem for the homeowner where he'll think that if you don't, it doesn't take it back, then, oh, the current holding on to it must be challah, and therefore, as we said, that's different than the Mishnah Masechtas Demai, because there is two different utensils. So there, he'll know and he'll listen to do it over again, even if he doesn't have to take it back. And in contrast to the Mishnah Masechtas Trumas, we're there, for sure you're not going to take it back, because really, midiraisa, it is a valid truma, just rabbinically, we make you go ahead and consider that as truma, because really it is biblical truma, but yafsa b'yitrim, so that you give him appropriate truma, as we said, because that's considered nesi'es chad, by giving the kohen the bad for the good that you're holding on to.